This paper has been slightly modified to optimize your listening experience. While we have included a brief description of the figures and tables, all references, citations, parentheses, appendices, footnotes and endnotes have been removed. To obtain these tables, figures, quotes, appendices, full references and citations for this paper, please view the HTML or PDF version at the iRodul website, www.irodul.org. International Review of Research in Open and Distributed Learning, Volume 18, Number 3, May 2017. The title of this article is Improving the K-12 Online Course Design Review Process. Experts weigh in on INACL National Standards for Quality Online Courses. The authors of this article are David Adelstein of Jinsong Schools and Michael K. Barber of Touro University, California. Abstract. Within the K-12 online learning environment, there are a variety of standards that designers can utilize when creating online courses. To date, the only research-based standards available are proprietary in manner. As such, many jurisdictions have begun adopting online course design standards from the leading advocacy organization, which that have yet to be validated from a research perspective. This article reports on the second phase of a three-stage study designed to examine the validity and reliability of the INACL National Standards for Quality Online Courses. Phase 2 utilizes two groups of expert reviewers to examine and provide feedback with goal of further refining these standards. Keywords: K-12 online learning, K-12 distance education, virtual school, cyber school, online course design. Improving the K-12 online course design review process. Experts weigh in on INACL National Standards for Quality Online Courses. K-12 online course designers have numerous options when contemplating standards to guide their development of asynchronous course content. However, not all standards are freely accessible. Some institutions, such as the virtual high school, have their own publicly available, in-house process, while other institutions use standards that are part of a proprietary system used by certified experts, such as the Quality Matters. In 2007, and then later updated in 2011, the International Association for K-12 Online Learning released their National Standards for Quality Online Courses. These standards were largely based on standards released earlier by the Southern Region Education Board, with some additions due to INACL's involvement in the Partnership for 21st Century Skills Initiative. The INACL standards used a rubric that covered five different areas to review the overall quality of a course. Since its initial release, the standards have been implemented in a variety of jurisdictions, including for use in states such as Michigan and Texas. However, even as the standards remain popular with legislators and policymakers, there has been no research published on the validity of the standards or a review as to how they relate specifically to online course design. The study reported in this article follows an earlier phase in the validation of the INACL standards. Phase 1 of this larger research initiative reviewed the construct validity of the INACL standards. Using contemporary research, each of the 52 elements found in the INACL standards were reviewed to determine the level of support each standard had within the research literature. Each standard was compared to research into K-12 online learning, as well as the broader field of online learning and course design. The following article describes phase 2 of this validation process, which consisted of three rounds of expert review over the revised INACL standards from the first phase. The authors will begin by briefly discussing the current state of K-12 online course design literature. The three phases of the expert review will be outlined, detailing the process and results. Finally, the revised K-12 online course design rubric will be discussed. Literature review. K-12 online learning is not a new concept. Prior to the widespread use of the World Wide Web, students and instructors would be able to connect via telephone or correspond through the postal service. As the opportunity for K-12 online learning increased, it should not be surprising that many courses were designed using the same principles that designers applied to these legacy distance models, as well as to face-to-face courses. Instead of telephones and the postal service, chat rooms and email were utilized. As websites and learning management systems came into existence, courses began to take and copy from traditional face-to-face courses. However, it became apparent that there were widening differences between the two environments. Effective online educators, for example, had to utilize skill sets better suited for K-12 online environments. As educators had to shift their way of thinking, the demand for an overhaul in course design began to form. Research, specifically about K-12 online course design, has been limited. There have been studies conducted that focus on specific programs, such as VHS or the Florida Virtual Schools. In both instances, the design of the online course is strongly considered along with other aspects. VHS requires its educators to take a mandatory graduate-level course that has a focus on design within the LMS. The FLVS utilizes a team approach consisting of subject matter experts, project managers, instructional designers, and web developers. The team process has proven successful for FLVS, but it is a very unique system. As K-12 online learning has continued to mature and evolve, best practice standards that include aspects of course design have also been released. Some of these standards are proprietary, such as those found in the QM system. Beginning as a three-year fund for the improvement of post-secondary education grant in 2003, the first QM rubric was formed in 2004. QM gradually became an entire process for online course review. The current rubric utilizes 8 general standards, while the program offers to train staff for peer reviews, course design, and more. However, even though they have never been tested for validity, the INICAL standards are an easy place for K-12 online course designers to begin because the standards and rubric are publicly available and non-proprietary. Methodology. Upon completion of the construct validity phase of this research initiative, the next stage was the content validity of the revised rubric. The purpose was to test the design of the new rubric through expert review. It was recommended to involve content area experts, as content validity is a result of their verification that the rubric meets the standards as outlined in Phase 1. Roblier and Wink denoted that a properly designed rubric used in educational technology is a meaningful way to both assess and guide practitioners. It should not be surprising to see a leader in the field, such as QM, used a rubric for their proprietary design standards during the creation process. 8 experts, who were divided into 2 groups, reviewed the standards over the course of 3 rounds, examining each standard from a course design perspective. The experts were selected based on their background and experience in K-12 online education. Table 1. Description of the 2 expert review groups. Specifically, each group consisted of a researcher, administrator, designer, and teacher, all of whom had been directly involved with K-12 online learning. During round 1, each of the experts received a document containing the 52 INICAL elements listed under the 5 main standards based on the results of the first phase of this research initiative. The document was color-coded to indicate the nature of research supported for each standard. There were also 2 additional sections added to the end of the document. The first section offered 4 new standards that were found to be present in the K-12 online learning research, while the second suggested combining elements that were seen as similar in scope. In round 1, the experts were asked to rate the importance of each standard as it related to course design using a basic Likert scale. An area for comments was also included for each section. After compiling the ratings from round 1, a second document was created that listed the average rating for each of the standards and the comments that experts made. Based upon both the raw rating, as well as expert suggestions, the researcher made suggestions about revising or removing certain standards. Experts were asked to select 1 of 4 options and to provide a written rationale for that decision. The responses from round 2 were again compiled in a new document that consisted of 3 sections: standards where there were general agreement that should be kept as written, standards where the expert feedback from the previous 2 rounds that had a clear consensus for either revision or deletion, and standards that did not have a clear consensus from the experts and would require further discussion. The experts' feedback from the previous rounds was listed under each standard. Round 3 consisted of 60-minute discussion with each expert group using Google Hangout that focused on the second and third sections of the Round 3 document. During the Google Hangout, the researcher facilitated discussion around the standards recommended for revision or deletion until a consensus was achieved on whether to revise or delete a particular standard, as well as the specific wording for any revised standards. Results. In this section, we organize the data using the complete INICAL National Standards for Quality Online Courses, broken down by section. The revised INICAL standards based on the expert review are provided in Appendix. Table 2. Section A. Content. Section A was highly regarded by the experts in terms of significance to course design. In the first round, there was overwhelming agreement to keep the majority of the elements in some form, with the exceptions of A5 and A12. Both elements were further discussed in round 2, with experts still divided on how to move forward. All experts shared in round 3 that the phrasing of A5 was problematic. Questioning how realistic it was to have all materials present before the course begins, Ron mentioned that due to the logistics of certain courses, having all material available is technically not possible in some settings, because you do an enrollment and that's when the students are there and they can't get access to the course until they are enrolled and they are enrolled at date of start, so it's not physically possible. It was suggested, and agreed upon by Group A, to change the wording to all course materials are available to students at the course start. Group B, on the other hand, did not think the element was appropriate. Amanda noted, you really don't know what's going to work until the students start the course and actually, you know, get their feedback as to what's working and what's not working. The other thing is that your course materials could be specific to that student as well, like some students may better at, a virtual lab or something else, and another student might learn better by watching a video or doing something else. With other elements in the rubric discussing additional materials, Group B moved to delete A5. The round 2 discussions of A12 led to a suggestion of combining it with A13 or keeping it as is. Both groups were quick to lean towards combining the elements. Ron suggested a further revision to include the pedagogy behind the material, as this understanding would help teachers to grade the assignment appropriately, but they would also be given the grading rubrics which they would then communicate clearly in an easy-to-understand manner to the students and parents. The rest of the Group A members agreed. Round 1 did include 2 suggestions from experts that were put forth in Round 2. The first looked to combine A1, A6, and A7 due to similarities. Experts were unanimous on combining the elements, with both groups agreeing on the suggested wording put forth in Round 3. The other suggestion was to delete A4. With an expert wondering if it was better suited at a program level and not at the course level, Group A had little discussion, as all agreed it was too broad and not a part of the course design. Group B strongly thought that the communications piece was already handled in element B9 that confirms whether students are engaged and are progressing through the course. The instructor will follow program guidelines to address non-responsive students, but perhaps the information literacy should remain. For example, Kelly liked the idea that information literacy should be embedded in the course design. I really do think that this might be a program-related piece because it is overarching whole content areas, so it's not specific to a course design, but it should be interwoven into the courses specifically. Group B agreed, and revised A4 to read, information literacy is incorporated as an integral part of the course. Eventually, a decision had to be made regarding the differences between Group A and B results for element A4. A5, and A12. This was accomplished by reviewing the current K-12 literature against the expert comments from all 3 rounds. Element A4 was deleted, with the thought that information literacy should have a focus at the program or curriculum level, and not in the course design. Element A5 was kept in the rubric using Group A's wording. Research showed it was important for the students to have access to the materials before the course begins, allowing them time to make sure everything is compatible with personal technology. Finally, A12 and A13 were combined using Group A's suggestions as well. Table 3, Section B, Instructional Design Elements. Much like Section A, Section B only had 2 elements, B9 that confirms whether students are engaged and are progressing through the course. The instructor will follow program guidelines to address non-responsive students, and B11, which required further discussion in Round 2. The wording of B9 was a point of contention for a few experts, with the element only mentioning the importance of checking engagement before and during the first week. There was a strong overall push to revise the element to include practices throughout the course, which led to the proposed rewording. The course design includes explicit communication activities at multiple intervals throughout the course that confirms whether students are engaged and are progressing through the course. The instructor will follow program guidelines to address non-responsive students. Group B was in agreement with suggestion, while Group A continued the discussion. Joanne mentioned that courses also come with tools to assess engagement, and these tools should be mentioned and used. She was also concerned with the length of the first sentence, so it was split into 2 sentences for final consideration. B11 was debated at length in both expert groups. There were numerous suggestions from Round 2, such as revising to include examples or combining with either A5 or B2. To start the conversation, the researcher offered the suggested revision. Course design provides students with resources that enrich course content. Group A agreed with the suggestion, with one edit recommended from Ron to include mention of universal design for learning. It was suggested to include it both in this standard and at the beginning of the new rubric. Group B had already eliminated A5, knowing that B2 and B11 covered much of the same territory. A B2 revision was previously agreed upon, but the group was quick to see similarities. Jason summed up the group's thoughts when he commented, B2 seems to be talking about the overview, and B11 is what is actually there, I guess, or at least describing the opportunities. Then, to go along with the overview, it just seems like they need to be focused together, to make them one. Further, Kelly suggested, course design provides students with resources that enrich course content. Each unit and lesson includes an overview of the key objectives that incorporate a variety of activities, assignments, and resources to provide multiple learning opportunities for students to master the content. The experts in Group A agreed. There were two expert suggestions from Round 1 that impacted B2 and B10. The concern over B2 stemmed from the use of the word logical, which appeared to lock the element into a traditional mode of design. Group B was quick to agree upon the revision, which simply eliminated that fall into a logical sequence from the end of the first sentence. Group A shifted their conversation to the use of units and lessons, with Joanne offering up modules. Ron agreed, adding, when we design courses, we design them around weeks, not units, not lessons, but around weeks. And I don't know if units and lessons precludes weeks, but I'm also not sure that it encourages that, and units and modules is better, but I would go around. I think organized by modules and take out the units. Louise was unsure of eliminating units, but came to an understanding that the delivery depends on the instructor and mechanisms used. Therefore, modules could stand alone. B10 was questioned by an expert for the use of Foster, which implied that mastery only comes from the suggestions listed in the element. A revision, the course provides opportunities for mastery and application of the material, was suggested to the experts. Group A unanimously agreed. While Kelly had a further revision for Group B, her thought was to keep the examples listed in the element similar to one another by relating each interaction to the student. The list was changed to student-instructor interaction, student-student interaction, student-course content, student-LMS, and experts were content to move on. After collecting the expert suggestions, a final decision was made on how to phrase B2, B9, B10, and B11. The most complex of the revisions involved B2 and B11. The similarities brought up by Group B were logical, and the reasoning from Jason was enough to move forward with a combination. Group A's suggestion of changing units and lessons to modules was taken under consideration and added to the final wording. Group A's addition of tools and punctuation were accepted for B9, and Group B's wording was used for B10. Table 4, Section C, Student Assessment Elements. Taken as a whole, Section C was positively viewed by the experts, with only C3 averaging below a cumulative 2.5 score. The use of the word frequent was an issue for the majority of experts, and it was suggested to replace it with quality. Both groups were quick to agree with the new wording. Three expert suggestions were taken from Round 1 and shared with the group as a whole. The first was C2, with the wording adequate and appropriate seeming too vague, leaving some experts to wonder who determines this. The initial comments from Round 2 were fairly split between keeping the original wording and revising the element. Group A promptly decided that the original, while a bit vague, gave enough direction for design. Group B, on the other hand, moved to eliminate and not replace adequate and appropriate. C6, according to one expert, suggested that the word may implies the rubric does not need to be shared with students. Another expert was concerned that a rubric will be forced upon a qualified teacher. A rubric must be supplied in the course, but a qualified instructor should have final say over which rubric to use. While there was unanimous agreement amongst the experts that the instructor will share the rubric with students, there was some discussion as to the phrasing of the final revision. The suggested wording supplied used. Suggested grading rubrics are provided to the instructor. The instructor will share a final grading rubric with students. Group B accepted the revision, but Group A was concerned over misinterpretations about the word final, as some might view it in the context of a final exam ultimately. Final was replaced by chosen in the element. Experts were also concerned over language in C7, and looked to replace easy to understand with clearly communicated. Group B unanimously agreed. While Ron from Group A suggested both phrases should be used, Louise and Ron offered continued revisions by adding to students and parents at the end, as they are the stakeholders who will interpret the policies. C2, C6, and C7 had minor revision details that had to be accounted for. C2 was kept as is, as the wording, even though vague in nature, gives some direction to the designer. Group A's version of C6 was kept to avoid misinterpretation, and C7 was also finalized by Group A much like C2. The wording gives appropriate direction to the designer. Table 5. Section D. Technology. Section D proved to be one of the most contentious for the experts throughout the process. D1, D2, D6, D7, D8, and D9 were all flagged for further discussion coming out of round 1. There was concern that D1 was not appropriate for all instructors, so adding where applicable at the end of the element was suggested by an expert. Both groups unanimously agreed with the revision. D9 was quickly agreed upon as well, with both groups acknowledging the importance of copyright laws. D2 was a lengthier discussion for both groups. All experts agreed that giving calendar examples limited what an online course could fit into. Group B suggested that the element was not needed at, and voted to delete the element. Group A, on the other hand, simplified the wording and related it to the module design previously mentioned in Section B in Round 2. The experts were split on how to handle both D6 and D7. For both groups, the conversation began with a possible combination of the elements, using the suggestion prerequisite skills, course tools, and course software are identified and appropriate in relation to the students and course. Louise mentioned to Group A that the notion of prerequisite skills should be part of communication, but was not a function of course design. The other experts agreed, and removed prerequisite skills from the revision. Group B was fairly adamant that D6 had to remain in some form or another. As Amanda put it, "I'm looking at this from trying to explain to a parent, you know, why their student shouldn't take this specific course because maybe they don't meet those prereqs." Prerequisite skills in the use of technology are identified. That is something that they need to know how to do, how to navigate, you know, different parts of the course. And it might be course specific, meaning different courses will have different prereqs. But I don't think you can delete this. After a bit more discussion, Group B approved the combination of D6 and D7 as suggested. From the round 1 and 2 comments, it appeared that some experts were not familiar with what D8 was referring to. Even after further explanation, Group A was quick to delete the element, not viewing it as a necessary part of design. Group B took a different stance, viewing D8 as something that will be important in the future of design. Jason brought up that as instructors and students move from one proprietary software to another, it is important they have the ability to keep communicating and creating. The other experts agreed, and opted to keep the element. As with the previous elements, a final version of the suggestions had to be obtained for D2, D6, D7, and D8. D2 appeared to have middling support from both research and the experts, so the decision was made to eliminate the element. The additional thought was that the modules in the course could be manipulated to fit any calendar, so there was not an overwhelming need to mention this as a design requirement. It would instead fall to the instructor and institution to make the course work for them. There was a strong argument for keeping D6, and the suggested combination of D6 and D7 was used. Finally, Group B's suggestion that D8 would be relevant in the future of design was enough to keep the element intact. Table 6. Section E. Course evaluation and support elements. Much like the previous section, E brought about much discussion as to how the elements pertained to course design, or if they did at all. E4, E6, E7, E8, and E10 were all forced into the discussion for round 2. E2 and E3 were suggested to be combined by an expert in round 1, and E4 through E10 were all put up for deletion in various round 1 suggestions. The conversation in round 3 began with combining E2 and E3. Group A believed the standards did not fit into design and should therefore be eliminated. Group B saw it differently, believing that the findings from the evaluation should be used to improve and update the course. However, there was concern over the use of periodically and what that actually meant. Kim suggested adding as needed to the end of the combined revision, and the rest of Group B agreed. During round 1, it was suggested that elements E4 through E10 could be completely eliminated, as they do not relate to course design. Group A quickly moved to eliminate all remaining elements, with the exception of E6. Louise was adamant that support should be built directly into the course, and not remain at the institution level. It's the program that is delivering, designing, and then delivering this online course that makes the determination how the technical assistance is going to be provided. But the given is that within that course design, is the tool for technical assistance. But it's a programmatic decision. We don't care who provides the assistance, as long as it can be found. The rest of Group A agreed, and a revised version of E6 remained. Group B, however, came to the conclusion that E6, as well as the rest of the elements in the suggestion, could be eliminated. Kelly summed up the collective thought. I think too there's a lot of them that are higher level program. The course provider in terms of technical support, they're going to provide that. I see a lot of program level, like orientation for students. I think that's program related piece. 2. That should be for all students taking any online course within the program or whatever it might be. Group B concurred, and elements E4 through E10 were deleted. Reviewing data and all reviewer comments, the suggested combining of E2 and E3 was accepted into the final rubric. Course design can be continuous and ongoing, meaning there should be an evaluation and improvement process in place. The revised version of E6 was also added. Group A made a strong case for the need of technical support to be located in each course. While it does not matter who eventually supplies the support, there should be access to help for every instructor and student directly within the course. Table 7, Section F and G, suggested elements and revisions. In Round 1, the experts were presented with 4 additional elements and 2 revisions. Elements F1, F2, and F3 were all readily accepted. In Round 2, there was a strong consensus to delete F4. When mentioned in Round 3, there was no call for discussion from either group, and F4 was eliminated. F1 and F3 were placed in Section B under the Instructional Strategies and Activities subsection. F2 was located in Section D under the User Interface subsection. The revisions were split with the experts. There was strong support in Round 1 to combine B4 and B6. The suggested revised wording was not brought up by experts for further discussion and was added to the final rubric. However, most experts did not believe E6 and E7 were closely related, and the combined suggestion was dropped. In the end, both elements were ultimately recommended for deletion by both expert groups. Discussion. The first section of the INACL National Standards for Quality Online Courses received a relatively high level of support from the experts during all 3 rounds of review. This result was not surprising, given the fact that these standards were primarily centered on structural and preparatory aspects of the online course. For example, in his study of course developers at a province-wide supplemental virtual school, Barber reported several principles of effective course design that were focused on items like the consistency of navigation and structured course content. Similarly, students have also stressed the importance of structural and preparatory material in an online course. Galani and Barron reported that students preferred a course structure with clear guidelines along with opportunities in the course to suggest alternative approaches to meeting course objectives. All aspects of structural and preparatory material found in an online course, even most of the QM general standard areas, were focused on what online course designers would describe as structural and preparatory items. Considering the significant tie between instructional and course design, expert support for the majority of the Section B elements was not unexpected. There was agreement that opportunity for higher order thinking, differentiating, and active learning be taken into consideration when designing the course. This was also supported by Mastropieri et al., who discussed how differentiating helped middle school science students achieve higher score on both in-class unit and state exams. The largest obstacle in Section B was actually related to the wording of certain elements. Experts agreed that resource materials could help with mastery, as have been seen in the K-12 online learning literature with algebra students who used virtual manipulatives. The wording and redundant nature of certain elements led to combining parts of Section B as a whole. The Section C elements were agreed upon and accepted by the experts in the revised rubric. This level of agreement was consistent with DiPietro, who interviewed 16 online educators and found that participants agreed that assessment and feedback helped students engage with the content, along with meeting their individualized needs. In fact, as students become engaged with the learning, they are generally open to hearing feedback on how to improve and reach mastery of the subject material. This feedback can be aided by the use of various resources, including rubrics, and by viewing course rubrics, students become aware of expectations. As with Section B, the experts were mainly concerned with the wording of various elements, and moved forward with the section largely intact. Unlike the previous 3 areas, Section D garnered more discussion with regards to both wording and how the elements pertained to course design. The experts agreed that flexibility was important to scheduling online courses, a notion that Wix also supported. However, the experts thought an element specifically about different calendar types was unnecessary, and that element was subsequently deleted. Further, There was also open debate over interoperability of the cores, with some experts not seeing the necessity of integration. However, Watson and Watson noted that LMSs needed to truly become systemic, integrating systems seamlessly to allow for improved collaboration across systems among stakeholders. While many of the remaining elements were eventually reworded or combined, the experts were generally agreeable with the general sentiment found in Section D. This is consistent with earlier studies into the design of K-12 online courses. For example, Barber interviewed 6 online educators who found that minimal and simple navigation gave a consistency that was appreciated by the students. The same group of educators, however, didn't feel that a course should shy away from multimedia and interactive elements, which could be used to enhance the curriculum. Section E was by far the most retooled area from the experts, but this is not to say that the elements were not important when creating an online course. As a few of the experts pointed out, all the elements were significant, but simply belonged to different rubrics, as opposed to one focused on online course design. For example, the VHS required a 26-week class in how to design a course that utilized the LMS. Further, the Illinois Virtual High School used a similar practice shell as well, as was pointed out by Barber, Kinsella, Wicks, and Toker. IVHS also realized that continuous support was needed, and offered monthly professional development using face-to-face, synchronous, or asynchronous methods. However, that did not mean that the need for professional development and support should be included in a rubric designed to measure quality online course design. Yet, not all elements from Section E were deleted. For example, continuous course updates were fully supported by experts, and was a practice utilized by many K-12 online learning programs. The final areas were Section F and G, which focused on the elements that were suggested for addition or elements that should be revised. The suggested elements looked to include student motivation in the course design structure, which was not a part of the original INICAL standards. 3 of the 4 suggestions were strongly supported by the experts, and found their way into the revised rubric without revisions. Both Chen and Zhang and Kim, Park, and Cozart reported that motivation was an essential part of education, particularly in the online learning environment. As such, it was important that components that fostered student satisfaction in autonomy and self-efficacy were planned for within the online course design. Conclusions and implications. After examining the INICAL National Standards for Quality Online Courses based on current literature and research in Phase 1 of the study, a revised set of standards were reviewed by 8 experts for Phase 2. The review occurred over 3 rounds, with the first 2 happening via email and the 3rd through a video conference. During all 3 rounds, the experts recommended that certain elements be kept, combined, or deleted using their knowledge and understanding of online course design as a guide. The end result was a K-12 online course design rubric based off the original INICAL quality standards that was further revised and refined. The INICAL standards, while praised by the experts, are purposefully broad, covering all aspects of online courses. The results of Phase 2 of this study helped to bring essential online course design standards into focus. This specialized and more focused view may be able to help curtail how overwhelming the standards can appear, especially for those new to the field of K-12 online learning and designing online courses for a K-12 population. The revised rubric will allow stakeholders, including educators, course designers, and administrators, to focus specifically on the aspects of online course design, creating a stronger base upon which to build asynchronous online course content. Having said that, the researchers would recommend that further expert review be conducted. Due to time and resource constraints, the experts for this study were limited to 8 individuals. Also, while the first 2 rounds were vital to giving the experts some guidance, the majority of the discussion related to and refinement of the individual elements occurred during the video conference, which was limited to approximately 1 hour. It would be beneficial to provide the experts multiple opportunities to video conference over the course of the refinement of the standards. Finally, the INICAL standards were chosen due to their open, non-proprietary nature. However, there are also other widely used standards that could be used or supplemented as the basis for this model of expert discussion. As for our own line of inquiry, with the expert review completed, the next phase of this particular study will test the application of the rubric. 3 to 5 teams of 2 reviewers will apply the rubric against current K-12 online courses. Using inter-ATAR reliability, the researchers will examine the reliability and validity of the rubric. Appendix. Revised rubric. This is the end of the article. The full text of this article is available at the IRODL website, www.irodl.org. Goodbye.